Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, welcome back to Revitalize and Replant. Today, we're going to give you 10, not 9, not 7, not 11, 10. Count them, 10.
10.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe
I think 10's a good number.
10's a good number. Yeah. We're going to give you 10 ways to deal with mean people in your church. Mean, cranky, cantankerous, difficult people in your church. And I'm not talking about your wife. I'm talking about other church members.
Is this a common... You think this is a common theme? Here's the truth. We all deal with this.
What?
We all deal with this.
You have... We think everybody deals with mean, cantankerous... My name is Mark Clifton. And this is Mark Halleck.
Hey, what's up, bud?
And Mark Clifton and Mark Halleck both have a lot of cold going on. We sort of have this cold
kind
and cold flu
allergy.
Thing. Cold allergy. Yeah. So this is going to be
a
really difficult podcast for you to listen to. And so we'll be doing a lot of blowing our noses and hacking. And so you got
hopefully
that.
We'll make
you
it
got
through.
That to look forward to. But don't be mean about it.
That's right.
We don't want you being mean.
That's the theme of the
day. Because this whole podcast is 10 ways that you can deal with the mean people in your church. Maybe I shouldn't say mean, but cranky,
difficult. Yeah, difficult.
Yeah, mean.
Okay, we'll go back to mean. Okay, here's number one. You ready?
I'm ready.
First, expect it.
Isn't that the truth?
Expect it.
We just sometimes, it comes as a total surprise that somebody just gets cantankerous with us, gets cross with us, says something harsh.
Because they love Jesus. Do people really, how do Christians
act like this? And I'm their pastor. Yeah. Do they know what I'm going through? And do they know how hard this work can be? And how I really am trying to do my best? And they come up and they get, and you do something well-intended, right? Something you really think is going to be good for the church and good for them.
Yep.
And they come and they just absolutely tear into you.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do it in front of other people. And so just expect it.
You got to expect it. And you expect it. This is where, again, our theology of sin, shouldn't shock us, right?
No, it really shouldn't.
You know, we're all in the process of being sanctified. And I think especially when I was young in ministry, I'll tell you this, it did shock me. It was like, man, I thought people in the church would be a lot nicer to each other. But I think as we recognize, man, we're all in process. We're all sinners. And you've got to prepare yourself mentally, I think, and spiritually to encounter difficult people.
And, you know, if you've been in sports, then you understand if you're gonna play football, then you know you're going to line up on, especially if you're a lineman, you're going to line up on that line, or if you're a defensive back, you're going to hit somebody, and somebody's going to hit you.
That's how it is.
That's the name of the game.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying in a church we're going to hit people and people are going to hit us, but I am saying we shouldn't be surprised. But you know why? When you play football... Before you get out there on that field, you or hockey. My wife and I love to watch hockey. Before you play hockey, before you do that, you're gonna. What do? You sit in the locker room and you put on equipment, and that equipment is designed to help you absorb
the blows.
The blows. Paul said, "I have fought the good fight."
Uh-huh.
He didn't say I sang the good song or I danced the good dance. And by the way, Paul says you need to put on the full armor of God.
That's right.
So you just got to be ready for all kinds of battles.
Yep.
Sometimes they come from outside the church, but sometimes they come from within.
That's
true. Do not be surprised.
Don't be surprised. Number two, don't lose your cool.
Ultimately important. And let me just say this. If you are not armed up with, people talk about, put on the full armor of God so it can protect you against every arrow of Satan. I get that. The shield of faith, the helmet of righteousness, the breastplate of righteousness, rather, the helmet of salvation. I get that. It helps you protect you against the arrows of Satan. But I believe this, too. The armor of God, putting on the helmet of salvation, I think Andy Davis said this, not only protects your head, but it kind of makes you think and act like a Christian. And if you're not armored up, all right, and what I mean by that, if daily you don't cover yourself with the armor of God, you don't really bathe yourself in prayer and be spiritually ready for the day, then you're going to respond to adversity and to people who are angry with you in a non-Christian way.
Yeah.
And if you're not armored up, not only are the arrows of Satan going to penetrate you, but you're going to respond in an ungodly
way. That's right,
So, but if you have the full armor of God, you're not going to respond in kind. Yeah. You're not going to be angry like they're angry. Yeah. And so you've got to be spiritually prepared every day. And Mark, you can't take a day off because you don't know when that phone call, that text, that drop-in visit from that angry member is going to happen. And if you respond in vitriol, you just make it so much worse.
Well, there's no quicker way to lose the respect of your people than to lose your cool. That's the bottom line. Have you? I've sat in meetings with pastors before, and I just go, dude, you just blew it, man. You just lost the trust of all these folks in this room because you didn't keep your cool.
And you're not going to get it back.
And you're not going to get it back. That's right.
Oh, man, you know, that is so true. Man, you blow up once, you can't undo that. No. And again, I really believe it's because you're not operating in the armor of God. You're not ready and prepared spiritually. You're operating entirely in your flesh.
And this leads into number three, which you kind of hit on a little bit. Don't fuel the fire.
I know.
Don't fuel the fire.
I know.
Don't add fuel to the fire, right?
I know. Your job is to reduce the temperature in the room, not increase
it. That's exactly right.
And I've often said for most of my life, so many pastors end up spending $20 on a 20-cent problem. I mean, it far worse by the way you respond to it.
It's so true,
and
man.
A lot of that is being defensive. It's being insecure as a leader. How dare you attack me? Sometimes leaders are so overly worried about my reputation. What's that going to be? Let the Lord take care of your reputation.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and if you blow up about that, and sometimes you look like you're so angry about it, you're so fearful of your reputation, maybe there's something behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make it worse.
No, it's true. Well, and this is where I'd say, man, here's a verse to memorize this week, Pastor. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but hard words stir up anger. And so remember that a gentle answer can diffuse the problem almost instantly. That's just the truth.
Right.
But the opposite is also true. You can stir it up. Here's number four, swallow your pride. Swallow your pride. This is hard to do.
Well, we've said it in several podcasts. God hates pride.
Hates it.
And he loves the humble, and he honors the humble. And I mean, swallow your pride. Your pride is not going to win the argument. Mm-hmm. It's not going to get you where you need to go. It's not going to build respect from the pastor, the elders, the deacons, the people around you. It's only going to lead to something bad.
That's it, every time.
Every time. Every time. Don't operate it. And you know how you do that is you realize I am unworthy of anything I have.
Yes.
You know, and as we said before, when people would accuse Spurgeon of something, even if it was not legitimate, he would say, you know, it really doesn't matter because I'm actually far worse than anybody knows anyway.
That's right.
Right?
That's
so
true.
Don't be prideful. Because even if what they say isn't true, there's enough true about you they don't know that you're far worse than that.
Well,
anyway.
That's right. And this is where I would tell you this. Be quick to say sorry. Now, I'm not saying you need to apologize for things you shouldn't apologize for. But like you said, Clifton, I mean, listen, everything we could do better.
Right.
Be quick to say
Someone
sorry.
Someone comes up to you and says, you know, that sermon, you just went too long. You know, I'll never forget. I preached my dad's sermon, funeral sermon, my dad's funeral sermon. And, you know, some of my sisters and some people wondered, you know, are you really want to do that? I was obviously close to my dad, incredibly close to my dad.
Yeah.
And, but he'd asked me to, and so I preached my dad's funeral sermon. And, you know, when you're trying to talk about your dad, you know, there was so much to talk about, and he was such a great pastor and such a great soul winner and such a great leader and such a great dad and such a great church member later in his life. Mm-hmm. And so I preached this sermon, and it went a little long, okay? It's my dad's funeral.
Yeah,
I had
seriously.
A lot I had to say.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not like I can come back next week and finish it, right? I mean, it's my dad's funeral. And so I poured my heart into it, and I got through it without breaking up or anything, and I felt like I had honored the Lord and the gospel and my dad. So we're done with the funeral, and we're having the meal in the church afterward. And a lady I didn't know, I didn't know her at all. She'd obviously known my dad, but I didn't know her. She came up and she sat down by me, and she said, I just want to say something about your message. Well, you immediately think,
I know.
This is going to be affirming, right?
It's a funeral after all.
It's
your father.
My father,
right?
We just buried him.
Yeah.
Actually, we haven't buried him yet because we had to drive quite a couple hours to the cemetery. So we hadn't left for the cemetery. We were having lunch. she sits down and she said, I just want to say something about your message about your father. I think she said, it was just way too long. She said, if it had been shorter, it would have been really much more impactful, but it just went way too long.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
I am serious.
Unbelievable.
I'm sitting there, and you know.
You talk about time to swallow your pride,
and,
right?
You know, I'm honest, I'm not, I didn't think, what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
But here's what I did think.
Yeah.
What would Harry do?
What would Harry do?
What would my dad do? Yeah. I know what I wanted to do.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Believe me, I know what I wanted to
say. What would Harry do? What did you do?
Harry, I did what Harry did. Harry said, you know, you're right. I did go too long.
Mm.
And thank you for pointing that out.
Wow.
And thank you for being here, and thank you for caring for my dad as much as you do. And that's all I said.
And it diffused it.
And it just diffused
it. Yeah. Wow.
You know, and I honestly, I did. I thought, that's how my dad would
that's
have handled that.
Yep.
And that's the way to handle that.
That's so good. That's a great story. Okay, listen, number five. This is great.
Yeah.
Play the happy ignorance card. So in other words, if someone says something that might seem critical, right, or inconsiderate, there's times where the best thing you can do is, quite frankly, just kind of shrug off the critique rather than making a big deal out of it.
Right.
Right? Especially for folks who are overly critical. Just constantly. It's like, it's because we want to be thoughtful. We want to be
right.
teachable.
Right.
But we're all going to have folks. It doesn't matter what you do.
Doesn't matter.
They're going to critique you
yeah.
regularly.
Exactly.
And so what do? Sometimes play the happy ignorance card.
What I used to say is sometimes if you magnify their angst toward you, mm-hmm. you are playing into their need for drama in life. And so you feed that need for drama. Many times when they're angry with you and angst with you as a pastor,
mm-hmm.
guys, it's really not the issue that's got them going. There's something in their life that, and we'll talk about this in a little bit too later, that they have this need for drama in their life. And so if you feed that need, then they're just going to keep coming back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they're going to get even worse with it. And and as you rank it up, they're going to rank it up even more. And then people talk about it, and all of a sudden they're sort of the center of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of really what they want.
Yeah.
And, you know, I again, working at Warnell back in those days, we had a lot of elderly people. We were making a lot of changes. Sometimes they would come to me, and they'd be very upset that we moved some stuff off the stage that had been there before, some parts of the staging, and they got very upset by that it didn't look like it used to, and those kinds of things. And we closed we had these wooden doors that closed the baptistry off. There was like a stained glass kind of image on the baptistry, but we would close those because basically we were doing some live stream sometimes of the worship service, and that was just really hard to look at mm-hmm. behind the preacher.
Yeah.
So we closed those doors. People would be upset about those kinds of things. You know, why did you do this? Why did you do that? And to just say, oh, we just, you know, we thought it was the best thing to do. And then they just kind of keep riling on you, and you say, you know what, I'm real sorry you're upset, but it's really not that big a deal. And you just leave it.
Yeah.
And pretty soon they realize they're not getting a rise out of you.
Right,
they're
exactly.
not getting a buzz out yeah. of you. You're not yelling back
you're
at them.
You're not getting the reaction they
it's
want.
It's not
yeah.
bothering you that yeah. they're yelling at you.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's just enough, and they just quit yelling at
that's
you.
That's right, yeah.
If they see it doesn't really bother you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't want to be careless or
sure.
or harsh.
Yeah.
But you also, sometimes I tell guys, sometimes the best thing you can do for someone who's totally antagonistic toward you is by just being kind to them and ignoring them, you just kind of marginalize them.
Yeah, that's right.
And even when people come to you and say, you know, Miss mm-hmm. Helen's really mad about you closing that door on the baptistry.
Yeah.
You know she's mad
yep,
about that.
Yep.
I go, I know, but she'll be all right.
Well, that is the next one. Shower them with kindness.
Yes.
And that's exactly what you're saying. That's exactly what you're saying. Number six. Here's number seven. Remember their brokenness. Remember their brokenness.
Yes. Older people are struggling. The writer of Ecclesiastes says to remember the Lord in the days of your youth before the evil days come.
Mm.
And growing old, it's a sign of the fall, right?
Yeah.
As we are, our bodies age and decrepit and death is coming. That's all a sign of the fall. And growing old is hard.
Yeah.
You can't do the things you used to do. You don't have the friends you used to have. Your children aren't anywhere near you, perhaps. And many mm-hmm. of them have not turned out the way you wanted. They don't treat mm-hmm. you the way they mm-hmm. think. You've lost your spouse. You've lost your loved one. You're losing your health. You have different aches and pains every day. You're trying to figure out whether you do Medicaid A, B, or C or
yep,
whatever.
Yep, yep.
Everything's a struggle. And sometimes even physically, they have pain constantly
yeah.
in their knees or in their backs or in their hips. and they can't eat what they used to eat, and they can't, and just understand that they're coming at you sometimes from a standpoint of pain.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Accept that and give them some grace because of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's good, man. And number eight, sometimes you just need to take a break. Like, you need to take a break.
What do you mean by that?
Here's what the article, let me just read this. It's advice often given in healthy conflict resolution is the principle of walking away to get some space and perspective. Doing this allows a person to cool down and gather their thoughts and feelings in the hope of dealing with the conflict in a healthy way. Sometimes you just need to, I would say this, hey, I love you and I hear you. Let's could we talk about this tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or could we just, could I call you in a couple days?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's amazing how sometimes just some space can just kind of calm things down. Now we can talk about it in a rational way.
Right.
Get anger out of the way. It's often the quick fuse.
Exactly.
You know, and I know that's been true for me at times. I just need to take a break and breathe a little.
And we're not talking about marriage, but that can be true in marriage.
It's true. Yeah.
You can say, honey, I think we're really escalating this here. We don't need to go.
Yeah.
Can we take about an hour? I want to go and just, I'm going to pray about it.
Yep.
And let's come back and
come back and talk.
Come back and talk.
Okay. Last two. Number nine is pray for the person.
Yeah.
And I would say, man, it's really hard to stay angry at somebody when you're praying for that person.
I agree.
And so we need to pray. And then number 10, the last one, of course, is always Matthew 18, a conflict is how they put it.
And yeah, so, if it gets to the point that none of this is working, then the scripture gives us some resolution to help bring other people into this to help deal with this conflict. You know, I will say that when Paul's writing the book of Philippians, it's a book of joy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that thing is just dripping with joy.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But at the very end of that book, what's he do? He points out two women by name.
Yeah, calls them out.
Calls them out and says, you guys got to quit fighting.
Yep.
Right? And church, you got to make sure they quit fighting.
Mm.
Now, why would he do that? Well, because, you know, they're sitting there reading that letter, and I'm sure those two ladies were pretty surprised to hear their name. Okay?
And probably the others were probably surprised that he named their
name. He named them, right. And it seems sort of out of character for this book on joy, this letter on joy. But Paul understood that disruption like that in the church would rob the church of its joy. Mm. It had to be dealt with. And I would imagine that these two had been trying to figure out how to work with each other, and it was just getting worse and worse. And Paul says about them, they are worthy people. They've helped me in the gospel. Mm. We need, and he said, they've got to quit fighting. And here's what I love about this, and our friend Trevin Wax pointed this out to me. Are you ready for this? What they were fighting about was not important and not theological.
Mm.
Because had it been important or theological, Paul would have picked a side.
Wow.
He would have said, this lady's right, this lady's wrong. He didn't even talk about that. He said, you're just fighting over things, so quit it.
Man.
And if you can't quit it, church, you need to help them quit it.
Yep.
So I think what we're talking about here is Matthew 18. Don't let it go on.
Mm-hmm.
If you've done these 10 things we've talked about and you still are at this impasse,
mm-hmm.
then you've got to do Matthew 18. Bring other people in.
It's great, man.
And that even comes to church discipline.
That's so good.
But you don't start with church discipline. You start with these things we talked
That's
about.
That's right. Yeah. Don't be the guy who makes church discipline a hobby.
Or that you even enjoy it.
That's right. Well, that's what I mean. It's like some guys love it. Some guys play pickleball. Others get excited about church discipline.
All right.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
Say, go to this. Look at these 10 things. Help you over. Next time somebody tells you you preach too long at your dad's funeral, go to these 10 things. All right? Thanks.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.